My name's Tiffany.
And I'm Wendy.
And welcome to Rogue and Wicked. All right, so today we're going to be talking about Poltergeist.
Yay! I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great movie, an iconic movie, a great cult classic, and of course there is a legend behind the Poltergeist. Before we dive into the movie Poltergeist, let's talk about what Poltergeist actually is. The word Poltergeist comes from the German language and is broken up into two words. Poltern, you know, to make a sound or to rumble. Mm-hmm. And Geist, which means ghost or spirit. So what makes a poltergeist different from a spirit is that a poltergeist makes disturbances that makes things move. A spirit is just a spirit. And while on occasion you will see a spirit make a light flicker, or you may see out of the corner of your eye, you know, a shadow person, it's nothing compared to a poltergeist. Poltergeists are usually associated with rotten smells that seem to come from nowhere. They're angry spirits who knock on walls, make doors open, violently shove things off of countertops, make things move across floors, and they can even open cabinets. And they love to pinch people, bite them, touch them, hit them, and trip them. They aren't pleasant, which makes them completely different than a spirit. So while people may not believe me, because let's face it, not everyone believes in the paranormal, I've had my own experiences with the poltergeist. But I wouldn't call it a poltergeist, because I'll tell you in a second. My childhood home was plagued by a poltergeist, right? And also a series of benign spirits. The poltergeist used to do all kinds of freaky shit to the point that I had to barricade my bedroom door to keep it out. We're talking pacing back and forth down the hallway, climbing into my bed, and I would literally see the handprints on the bed, but not see the spirit itself as it was like moving across the bed, shaking my bed violently. And whenever the fan was on, I could hear whispers through the fan, which would literally send shivers down my spine.
How old were you at the time?
Oh my God, this was all throughout my teenage years and in my 20s.
Well, you know about the house I grew up in and that Bart and I stayed in for a duration during our teens too, right?
Yeah.
I believe you because of, you know, of my own experiences, and I trust you because you're a very cognitive and truthful speaker and thinker, as well as the fact that, you know, while I believe nobody would believe me, I had those people solidify these things by creating such a thread.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I know a lot of people don't, and that's cool too. Hey, it is what it is. I don't care what people think. So yeah, so whenever the fan was on, I would hear whispers through the fan, which would send shivers down my spine. I even had guests that would stay over and they claimed that they were attacked in the middle of the night. And one night I was smoking some of that sweet Mary Jane and I was watching a movie. I hear this screaming noise that sounded like nails on a chalkboard. I'm searching around the room with my eyes to see where the noise is coming from, and boom! I see a solid oak ottoman sliding across the floor very slowly until it hit the bottom side of my television stand and then just stopped.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I was completely freaked out.
That's a heavy piece of furniture.
Yeah, it was a heavy piece of furniture. I mean, it wasn't like that. I could pick it up and put it down, but it wasn't light.
Right, for something that's a 32-ounce ghost, that's quite a feat.
Yeah, right? And I mean, like, at the time, my heart was beating a mile a minute, but I was so used to the poltergeist that when I realized it wasn't an intruder, I was like, eh, it's just Steve. Yeah, I named my poltergeist.
Could you ever, when they were whispering to you, discern what they were saying?
No. One of them was speaking Spanish, though. I couldn't understand what he was saying because I don't speak Spanish.
okay.
But see, me and Steve, we came into an agreement. I don't stay in his favorite bedroom anymore, and he leaves me alone. I put salt in every doorway because, well, I'm Wiccan. And I also saged the whole house. I hung besoms up on the wall, and I have pentagrams everywhere, so he stays the fuck out of my space now, I'll tell you that.
Black salt, no doubt.
Actually, I use sea salt, but it's fine. It worked.
Something that we do in our house is we don't just use the sea salt, but we utilize the ash from the sage after saging, and we mix that with the sea salt, and it's called black salt. And you essentially do the same thing with it, but it's to keep to keep negative spirits out.
Yeah, I pretty much made black salt without actually mixing it together because I saged before I salted, so.
Yeah, you should try mixing the two sometime. In fact, I can send you some black salt because we have a whole bunch of it at our house.
All right, cool. Send it.
Will do.
Anywho, poltergeists are traditionally described as troublesome spirits. We all have trauma, man. You know, who haunt a particular person or location. Folklore suggests variations of poltergeists, and most of the information on poltergeists dates back to the first century. But they didn't become commonplace until the 17th century. Psychologists describe poltergeists as a person's delusions, schizophrenia, or hallucinations brought on by psychological factors. There are many skeptics, and psychologists look at poltergeists as a hoax or a figment of one's imagination. But that doesn't explain group sightings, unless everyone is psychotic. I mean, I know I'm a bit crazy, but fuck, man. My mom saw the same shit, too, and heard them. So explain that to me, mind mediator.
No, I totally agree with you. Hence the reason I made that post, because when you say things in unison, it's a little bit harder to
refute.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Alan Gould and Tony Cornell did an experiment to see if Guy Lambert's theory that the poltergeist phenomena could be explained by the movement of underground water. He also proposed water can cause stress, resulting in vibrations, and those vibrations move the objects. So Gould and Cornell placed specific items in different moves and subjected it to mechanical vibrations. The structure of the house had been damaged, but a few items moved a short distance, so that the theory wasn't a complete wash, but it still could explain the fast movements of the objects without destroying the integrity of the structure. So some others theorized seismic activity could cause phenomena, and also ball lightning might be the cause of spooky movements of objects blamed on the poltergeists.
So what is a ball lightning exactly?
I'm not exactly sure, but one guy named William Roll suggested that poltergeist activity could be explained by psychokinesis, which means soul movement. So basically, it's like telekinesis, but made by a spirit. Because this can't be repeated during experiments over and over again, it is regarded as a pseudoscience.
So that means Jean Grey gets to keep her powers after she passes away.
Yeah.
Awesome. Go, Jean Grey.
Poltergeist was an iconic film produced by Steven Spielberg and released in 1982. It was part of a film trilogy, and all three films were brilliant. The urban legend surrounding Poltergeist had to do with the deaths of four of its cast members between the years of 1982 and 1988.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah. So, spoiler alert! I'm going to describe the events of the movie so people who haven't seen it get a feel for what it was about. I'm not going to reveal the ending, though. So, if you're one of those people who have been living under a rock for the last 39 years and haven't seen it, well, I recommend you fast-forwarding if you don't want to hear about the film.
This is one of those very few times where even though I've lived under a rock, I have seen this one movie.
Exactly. And you haven't seen a lot of movies.
Exactly.
Poltergeist revolves around the Freeling family, which consisted of Steve, played by Craig T. Nelson, Diane, played by Jo Beth Williams, Dana, played by Dominique Dunn, Robbie, played by Oliver Robbins, and Carol Ann, played by Heather O'Rourke.
Carol Ann.
Carol Ann, don't look into the light.
Sorry.
They are a very regular family in a regular house with some very regular children. That is with the exception of Carol Ann. The movie gets right to the point in the first scene. It's a star-spangled banner playing in the backgrounds. And unless you're an 80s child, that meant that all your regularly scheduled programs were about to go off air. After the cable cuts out for the night, the television goes completely static. And it made for an awful noise. That was the noise the TV would make. I have to explain it because there's a lot of people in their 20s that have no idea what I'm talking about. So
you knew that if you got that right amount of, you could get free porn.
Yeah, you could. Sometimes you flick between the stations. Once in a while, through the zigzags of muffled static, you'd get a booby.
Absolutely. I remember Bart and I were doing precisely that once, and this is just a quick sidebar because it's funny as hell, and we heard this woman screaming frantically, and we thought we were about to tune into a horror movie, and then all of a sudden she's like, oh yeah, fuck that hole! Wah! On a and him and I just died laughing. Like, oh no, it's not a horror movie, it's a horror porn.
That's hilarious. So the dog starts tearing through the house looking for food and wakes up Carol Ann. Dad's passed out in the front of the tube, and Carol Ann comes down to see a static TV and starts talking to the television set. She gets annoyed because she can't understand what it's trying to say to her, and she goes full-blown nerd rage on the TV and starts screaming at it. Everyone wakes up and comes downstairs all confused about who she's talking to, and the mother gives her a look like she thinks maybe her daughter is sorta psychic, but maybe not. And her father brushes it off as sleepwalking. After it finds Carol Ann, it's fixated on her. So it decides to come out of the television set and burst through into the world of the Freelings. This thing comes out of the television, hovers over the family, and goes into the foundation of the house. Carol Ann is awake at this point and witnesses the whole thing. And that's when she says one of the most famous horror movie lines in history of horror cinema. They're here. And the family is jolted awake by all the noise, and they just shake it off the next day like, eh. The house was violently shaking. It must have been an earthquake. Again, the mother is suspect of dismissing it so quickly, and she again is suspicious that there's some paranormal activity at play. The movie has everything in it, from creepy clowns to portals into other dimensions. The family brings in paranormal teams, and at the end, you get to see Satan's anus.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's... You have to watch it to know what I'm talking about, but when you see it, you can't unsee it.
All this talk about vibration and penis.
Well, that's an anus, I said. Not his penis, his anus.
Oh.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm talking about, right? The end of the movie?
Yeah, I do. I was just being facetious.
Okay. During this journey into the unknown, Carol Ann gets kidnapped into the in-between. This badass little psychic played by Zelda Rubinstein comes in and tries to help the family navigate with her through the unknown to save Carol Ann. She is one of the best parts of the movie. She was this bite-sized little badass who also played a very small role, no pun intended, in 16 Candles.
Oh, another movie I haven't seen.
Wow. You have to watch that one too. It's amazing. While the family is in the moment and waiting for some action to happen, there's some pretty cool little scenes in between. There isn't a lot of CGI in this movie, but it didn't lack it either. I'd say it's about 50-50, which makes for some cheesy but really cool handmade special effects. During these smaller scenes, you get to see a bunch of weird, gory scenes and tap into your own personal fears about the unknown. I'm not going to give the ending away, and I left a lot of stuff out, like how I found Craig T. Nelson, like, really hot, even though he was old enough to be my dad. He was, like, the quintessential dad bod type, and he was kind in the eyes, but still a little masculine.
Do you still find him attractive, or has your palate changed since?
No, I think I find him more attractive than I'm closer to his age now in the movie.
All right. I don't find him attractive, but we don't always agree.
Well, I don't normally find guys like him attractive, but there's something about him. I don't know what it is. I just can't explain it. So he was the all-American regular guy. I mean, that's why I think I liked him so much. Like, you knew he wouldn't cheat on you.
The one time you're attracted to a good boy.
I know, right? That's not often.
Not enough.
No. The other two movies were good, too. And I usually don't say that about trilogies because a lot of trilogies are shit. But this one was... They are.
No, I mean, I didn't know that there were any.
What? Really? There's like two other movies.
I had no idea. So there you go.
Well, you're going to have to watch them now. So this one was pretty good. All three had very interesting characters introduced throughout the movies, especially Kane, played by Julian Beck. The main four deaths that surrounded the Poltergeist films that caused such a huge urban legend around the film resulted in murder, and some were just benign deaths. due to illness and natural causes. A lot of people involved in the film were furious that people were taking this and running with it. The first incident happened during recording of the first film. During the clown scene, Oliver Robbins, who played Robbie, was accidentally strangled by the mechanical clown they used during recording. A lot of people said his performance was incredible, but that's because he almost died from a malfunctioning prop.
What?
Yeah. They kept the scene in the movie, which added to its authenticity, and it made for a really good scene. But, and I didn't mention this, but, you know, Steven Spielberg had to save him.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go in there and watch it again.
Yeah, it's good. So the second incident was with Julian Beck, who played Kane in Poltergeist 2. During the filming of the movie, he was on last stage chemo treatments for his stomach cancer. And if you ever seen the movie, he was so creepy because he resembled a corpse because his weight and sickliness at the time was due to his chemotherapy and cancer. And it was a shame, though, because he was literally dying of cancer. But they kind of used that to their advantage because it made him look really old and decrepit and kind of evil, which that makes me sad. When I found out why, it just really made me sad. I don't like that.
In a way, I feel like, though, this gives him a last hurrah. You know, like if I was dying of cancer, I would love to be featured. And I can't act worth a shit. We both know that. But I would love to, if I could act, make it so that my last appearance was utilizing something that I couldn't control.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. That sounds about right. That's probably what he was thinking.
Right. And of course, you know, I have those stoic overtones in regards to my, you know, Socrates take on those types of things, which really does help me to not empathize, but also kind of look at the bright side of things. And yeah, so maybe that will help you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess just feel like this, it was still kind of wrong for them to play on his cancer.
On their part, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but on his part, you know, maybe it was what you said, who knows?
Mm-hmm. And that conversation could have very well transpired between himself and those people, for all we know.
Yeah, and of course, we'll never find out, so. But unfortunately, he passed away on September 14th, 1985, after losing his battle with stomach cancer. Another member of the cast of the second film died 2 years after Julian Beck. His name was Will Sampson, age 53. Following a lung and heart transplant, his body rejected his organs. Sampson had scleroderma, which I also have, and it's a rare autoimmune disease that affects your skin, soft tissues, and internal organs. Basically, your body tries to kill itself because it thinks you are a disease, and it literally tries to kill you. He passed away on June 3rd, 1987. During the filming of the last installment of the trilogy, the main character, Carol Ann, played by Heather O'Rourke, died following 2 cardiac arrests and sepsis after congenital stenosis of the intestine. The last few scenes of the movie, they used a stunt double because she was gone before the end of the filming of Poltergeist 3. She died on February 1st, 1988 at 12 years old. All of these circumstances are very sad but very reasonable reasons as to how somebody would die. These are very unfortunate circumstances but are due to health-related reasons, and none are very unusual. So where does this curse come from? Well, for one thing, during the filming of the first movie, Spielberg thought it would be cheaper to use real human remains for the last few scenes of the movie, and there were a lot of bodies.
Where did he get these human remains?
I have no idea, but they were real, and I always thought they were props. It was cheaper for him to use the human remains because they looked more realistic, and it would have cost a fortune to create a mold of all those fake skeletons. What really creeps me out is Diane is trying to escape the pool, and there are literally real human remains floating all around her, with skin and muscle still attached, soaking wet. I mean, could you imagine that? Like a soaking wet corpse floating around you?
I mean, I'm trying to surmise that, as well as the fact that they were allowed to use these bodies. What, did they have an agreement with a mortuary or something?
I guess. I have no idea. Maybe they're Jane Doe's and John Doe's. I don't know.
Right, and I know this is in the 80s, so perhaps their laws were a little bit more lax at that time than they are now, but I can't imagine that they would ever let, you know, unless somebody donated their bodies or had this, like, you know, pre-existing contract where it's like, okay, use my bodies for whatever you want, but...
Maybe, but I feel like it's Steven Spielberg, so...
He's got the money.
Yeah.
Oh, you know,
No money, no honey.
Exactly. I mean, he could have very well paid money to the families of these people, and they're probably like, well, they're not alive anymore. What damage could it possibly do? Who knows? But to me, that just is absolutely surreal.
Yeah, I know. It's whacked. I imagine that they must have given off an odor because decomposing bodies, floating around in muddy water, like, must have...
Yeah, true.
Ew. I couldn't even... I mean, the skin would have to be slipping after they pulled them out of there, because I'm sure they had to redo that scene. I mean, it takes a while to record a scene unless you get it on the first take, which usually doesn't happen. So I know they were floating in there.
The stomach required to be around that.
Well, I'm going to tell you some more about that later. They had better paid her well to do that scene because I'm gross. Today is a great day to start your own podcast. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message that you want to share with the world, or just think it would be fun to have your own talk show, podcasting is an easy, inexpensive, and fun way to expand your reach online. I know Wendy and I have a hard time learning new apps and navigating new websites, but Buzzsprout has made their website so user-friendly that even we can manage to navigate the site flawlessly. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and much more. Within minutes of finishing your recording, Buzzsprout gets your show listed in every major podcast platform. And say you already have an account with Buzzsprout. Well, you can upgrade. Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help you find the right equipment at the right price. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out into the world. Let's create something great together. The biggest and most well-known reasons for the curse of the poltergeist is the death of Dominique Dunn. She was the sister of an actor and her father was a writer and a producer. So she was born to, like, be in show business. Dunn was a rising star at the time who appeared in TV shows such as Fame and Lou Grant. Her first successful film was Poltergeist, and in 1982, she was taking off in her career. While she was trying to excel in all parts of her life, in other parts she was failing. She had broken up with her boyfriend, John Sweeney, who worked as a chef in L.A. He was a typical narcissist who was extremely possessive. He always made sure he knew exactly where she was and who she was dating. Dunn and Sweeney had arguments that started escalating in the physical abuse. One incident left Diane pretty shaken up when he ripped out a chunk of her hair during a fight, like a large chunk. In 1982, Dunn was done with Sweeney. During an altercation with Sweeney, he grabbed her by the throat and started strangling her. A friend of theirs was staying with them at the home and came into the room and when he heard the assault. He stopped it and Dunn left the house and stayed in an unknown location for a series of days. Eventually, she was able to kick Sweeney out of her LA home, but unfortunately for Dunn, Sweeney was obsessed with her and started stalking her. A month later, on Mischief Night, in 1982, he went over to Dunn's L.A. home and knocked on the door.
What is Mischief Night?
Oh, you don't have Mischief Night?
I'm not. If we do, I'm unaware of what that is.
I think it's a Jersey thing, and I probably should have elaborated on that.
Please do.
Mischief Night is the night before Halloween. So Mischief Night in New Jersey, that's the famous night where everybody goes out onto the streets and eggs people's houses and throws toilet paper in their trees and keys people's cars and smashes all their pumpkins off their steps. It's the night of mischief and wonder. And I don't know how it started, but it's a fucked up holiday. And when I was little, I partook in it. But now that I'm an adult, I would be really pissed off if some kid egged my car.
Right, well, yeah. we did so many things as we were kids that now that we're adults, we look back in hindsight like, you know, when I was ripping that plywood off of that abandoned building, maybe I was actually destroying what could have been preserved. Ooh, whoops.
Yeah. So Sweeney went over to Dunn's LA home and knocked on the door. He was hoping he could weasel his way back into Dunn's life, hoping he could reconcile with her. She was inside rehearsing with David Packer for a role in the science fiction series V, in which she was already kind of two episodes in. So this was episode 3 that they were rehearsing for. When she answered the door to see what Sweeney wanted, he asked to speak with her. She went out onto the porch to hear him out, but she refused to get back together with him. He grabbed her and dragged her into the driveway, and then he strangled her for over 5 minutes until she was dead.
Narcissists do not enjoy rejection.
No, they don't. So Packer was confused and left the house to see where Diane was. At this point, he ran into Sweeney, who told Packer, "I killed my girlfriend." What a fucking piece of shit. It was rumored that Dunn's friend, who was present during the argument, was listening to the Poltergeist soundtrack to block out the noise of the fighting outside, which is how that supposedly is linked. But that was a rumor, and nobody knows if it's true.
You mean purposely making the music loud enough so that his friend could get away with murder?
No, it was her friend, I think.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it was Dunn's friend, so it was her friend. But I guess it happened regularly, so nobody thought that she'd end up getting murdered, you know? But I don't know if it's true about what he or she was listening to, which would have been the Poltergeist soundtrack. That's the part that really, I don't know. We don't know.
Well, you know, it would be a lot easier to pull off a murder when somebody is working on a horror film.
Well, yeah, but at the time, I don't think she was working on it anymore. She recorded all the films.
Oh, okay. Well,
and she was working on other projects. So at Cedars Sinai Medical Center in L.A., Dunn remained in a coma but showed no signs of brain activity. Dunn died on November 4th, 1982, the year of the release of Poltergeist 1. Dominique Dunn was just 22 years old when she died. After her death, her father Dominic wrote in Vanity Fair, "She played a battered child in Hill Street Blues." What we would not know until the trial was that the marks on her neck were real from John Sweeney and his assault on her. Sweeney was charged with murder and the case went to trial in 1983. The defense was that the crime was a crime of passion. The defense blocked Sweeney's other ex-girlfriend from testifying that he had assaulted her over 10 times, so the jury never knew about the history he had with domestic violence. The defense also attacked Dunn's character. The jury found Sweeney guilty of voluntary manslaughter, and the law was at the time that the sentence for that crime was a maximum of 6 years in jail.
Wow, and do they have to serve a full term in this regard?
He only served 2 years and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, 2 years and a half. Dunn's mother, Ellen Griffin, established a victims' rights group called Justice for Homicide Victims. Another incident that made people think the film was cursed was during the clown scene in the first movie when Robbie was drug underneath the bed. He was almost murdered by the animatronic arm of the clown when it had malfunctioned and almost strangled him to death. The actor playing Robbie recalled to Icons of Fright the way they shot the sequence. They didn't have the special effects the way they do today. So the clown doll had this extended arm that had me backwards in a tight, confined space under the bed. It was then that the doll's arm began to choke his neck. The contraption caught around my neck. Steven saw that, probably in the video assist, and he pulled me away from it. Who knows what might have happened otherwise. It was very fast. Maybe I wouldn't be here today.
It's interesting that Steven Spielberg both saved him and allowed for the authenticity of this particular scene to remain in the movie as well.
Yeah, well, he did the same thing with the body, so.
Oh, that's very true. Yeah.
There was also a near miss on one of the cast members of Poltergeist. Actor Richard Lawson, who played one of the paranormal team members in the film, would have been in a plane crash in 1992 that claimed the lives of 27 of the 51 passengers on board. That is, if he wasn't given a first class seat after giving a fan his autograph. The person in his original seat died in the plane crash. This was a very Final Destination moment, if you ask me.
I was just thinking about that. Yes, the first Final Destination had some similar undertones.
That's kind of, it's like he switched seats with somebody and they died, not him.
Although now death is after him, wah-ha-ha.
Yeah, right? Who knows? I mean, if the world was like that, that would be really whacked. You'd have to watch out for accidents.
I love how they had the Candyman play in that.
Yeah. Then we get to the paranormal hauntings reported by cast members of the filming of the movie. Jo Beth Williams, Diane, was experiencing some paranormal activity in her temporary home during the production of Poltergeist. The picture in her apartment kept shifting into different angles whenever she would leave to shoot the movie. When she would come home, it would be in a different position. And she said it may have been because she was slamming the door when she was leaving to go film, or maybe it's the curse.
Or maybe some of that acting precipitated into her life. You know, sometimes even Jim Carrey has professed this to happen to him, where they take home with them their script because they have to imbue themselves within that manuscript so wholeheartedly that they can't leave it there when they go.
Yeah, maybe. Author James Caan, who was writing a novel of the movie, had also experienced some unsavory paranormal experiences. A lightning bolt struck the building he was in when he was finishing up the project, and the front of his air conditioning unit flew off and across the room and struck him in the back. After that, the lights came back on and his video games started playing themselves. I wonder if the ghost beat the level. I don't know. Somebody's got to ask him if he's still around. This was according to grunge.com. Director Gil Keenan had the biggest paranormal experience surrounding the Poltergeist series while filming the remake in 2015. In his Reddit AMA, he wrote that the house that he rented for production was the site of some minor, inexplicable phenomena. The lights flickered on and off for no reason, and other equipment only worked in certain portions of the property. I used a lot of aerial drone photography in the film, and the drone pilots were never able to lock the GPS signal in this field. We would have to move 10 feet away just to launch the craft, he added. The house that I rented during the filming was straight up legit haunted by a female spirit dressed in black, he wrote, and I became aware of her within the first few days of staying in that house. And only after I left did I receive a call from the previous owner, who had moved back in, who was terrified of the goings-on in the house and wanted to see if I had experienced any of it. She definitely was there, and it didn't follow me back to L.A., but it followed me back to the set and to where I was sleeping during filming. Will Sampson, who was a real-life shaman in the sequel, he performed an actual exorcism on the set of the film to rid the site of alien spirits, which even added to the overall weirdness of the original film. During the filming of Poltergeist 3, Zelda Rubinstein had a paranormal experience herself when she was upset by a photographic light blur that kept happening during a photo sesh. She believed that the pic was taken at the exact moment of her mother passing away.
You know, I'm wondering if, and this is based on the, you know, chicken or egg concept, whether or not they were tapping into the ether and into these other realms, and that was like precipitating into their lives, or they were manifesting these things. You know, sometimes when you're writing, you're innately like tapping into a higher dimension, and other times you are manifesting what you're writing.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, it all involves the laws of metaphysics in either case.
Yeah, and it's weird because you can't prove any of it, and we could.
No, you can't, but it definitely leaves it open for you to wonder which was happening. You
it
know?
Does. It keeps you open for interpretation, I'll tell you that.
It does. You know, this is the same thing that happened regarding The Exorcist, too, where they were, I mean, the actual scenario in that The Exorcist was based on, like, they weren't sure if, you know, him and his aunt using the Ouija board conjured something that unwittingly befell her unexpected death and then ended up, you know, befalling him and possessing him and all of that, or whether it was that he was dealing with the trauma of her loss and it being the major loss of his life, and all of that was just behavioral. And, you know, it is interesting that there are so many variables that these situations incorporate that cannot be solidified by anything except what would be traditionally perceived as irrational superstition.
I know, it blows your mind, but I like to keep my mind open to those things.
Oh, you do? That's what makes it interesting listening to you speak about these things, is that you look at these things from all angles and you never miss a beat.
That's true.
You keep your mind so open, you have to worry about your brains falling out.
Right? Also, during the production of Poltergeist 3, some weird shit started to happen on set. The garage that was used for filming burst into flames after a fake plastic ice poured onto the prop cars, ignited, and injured 3 crew members. The fire chief responding to the scene said a ball of fire chased everyone out. There was black smoke all over the place. Yeah, this was supposed to be done with the best of taste, but somehow it got away. Whether or not Poltergeist movies were really cursed, haunted, or just a bunch of coinkydinks, we shall never know. But what I do know is that Zelda Rubinstein had a lot to say about the accusations that the movie was cursed. In a segment on CNN, she went balls to the walls about how she felt about everything. I owe it to Heather to present her case as most and honestly and lovingly as I can. I love this child very much, and I am still very grieved at her passing. Heather died because of an undetected congenital anatomical defect. Julian Beck died from cancer in his mature years, and Will Sampson passed away after receiving a heart and lung transplant. It is my understanding that he had an environmental disease, and dominated Monique Dunn died at the hands of an extremely ill-directed, passionate ex-boyfriend. These are reasons. I do not call this a jinx, and I think it's pretty much a courtesy to put an end to the superstitious crap. And I'm going to leave it there, guys and ghouls. Remember to put your jack-o'-lanterns out for Samhain to help those spirits go from the realms of the living back to the slumber of their afterlives. We don't want any lingering souls about next Halloween. Remember to check our Patreon and our Facebook pages for exclusive context, including, well, that was the end of it because I guess I stopped writing there and I left a run-on sentence. So
remember to look at our Patreon, for we will be showing you our explicit, sexy, Halloween-loving nature.
Well, that stuff already been out for months before this episode even gets posted.
So, oh, there'll be more.
If anybody wants to check us out on Facebook, go to Rogue and Wicked on Facebook. You can go check us out at Instagram at Rogue and Wicked Podcast. You could check us out on TikTok. I believe that's also Rogue and Wicked Podcast. And you could send us an email if you prefer at rogueandwicked@yahoo.com. Or check out our Patreon if you feel so inclined to get access to our bonus content, pictures, and polls. And that would be at www.patreon.com/rogueandwicked. So I want to thank you, Wendy, for coming and joining me this wonderful evening to discuss the poltergeist.
So yeah, we're looking forward to doing another session with you next week, and it's always a pleasure, of course.
Of course it is. We have a good time on here. So thanks, everybody. And if you want to, send us a message or something and tell us what you think about whether you think the poltergeist is a curse or not. And thanks for listening. Bye.